All right, y'all, it's spring, and you know what that means. It's time to start planning our summer festival traveling. Yep, it's time to get into my Airbnb bag cross-country, a.k.a. Time to visit my homes all across the country. And you know what I never think about? Why not list my own spot on Airbnb and host some folks at my house? I mean, my house is cute. Yes, let's make money while we're spending money. Just trying to help you out, man, because your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio.
We're rolling. Let's go.
Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
It is Questlove.
Yeah.
Aren't you glad?
Yeah.
Erica Idle-Dip is here.
Yeah.
Lightyear's gonna get mad.
Suprema. Suprema roll call.
Hey.
Suprema. Suprema roll call.
My name is Fonte.
Yeah.
That's who I am.
Yeah.
Letting you know I too.
Yeah.
Have a cousin named Pam.
Roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call.
My name is Sugar.
Yeah.
And this is my phone.
Yeah.
And if you're still living single.
Yeah.
I live alone.
Roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call.
I'm unpaid bill.
Yeah.
Now take it easy.
Yeah.
Might have drank.
Yeah.
A few martinis.
Roll call. Suprema.
Your turn, Erica.
Suprema.
Oh, my fault, Laia.
Suprema.
Not yet.
Suprema roll call.
It's Laia.
Yeah.
And let's talk style.
Yeah.
TV couples.
Yeah.
It's Max and Kyle.
Roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema.
Your turn.
Suprema roll call.
My name is Erica.
Yeah.
I'm the coolest.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I don't look too foolish.
Roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call.
Now I'm here too much.
I had to do that.
Oh, that's
we got to have the dance in silhouette. Like,
we got to call Big Glass, man.
Yeah, we got to get
that. That was
funky fresh. I feel very welcome.
Thank you.
What's up?
Fun fact, in doing the LL tour, whenever Latifah went on the road with us, the biggest response, like bigger than any LL song, bigger than any song
Living
of the night.
Single theme song?
When we did Living Single, that
hell
shit was
yeah.
like doing Smells Like Teen Spirit by Nirvana.
Yes.
Yeah, I can believe it.
Like, Dana thought I was lying to her when I said, yo, we need to do that twice.
Yeah.
Like, literally, as soon as it came on, check it out. Whole crowd started.
What? Yeah. All the way to, I'm glad I got my girl.
Yes. I love it.
Come
well,
on.
That's good to know. Take that to the bank.
This is a new version of Questlove Supreme, which we are still in the room together, but we're doing a virtual episode.
Via satellite.
We're live in person.
We're sort of live.
Yeah, we're sort of, in person, right?
Well, we're here together, which we
I
now
like it better than us being all on Zoom. This is still cool.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
So, wish you were here.
Team Supreme, how are we?
Good, man.
So we're not going to act like we weren't doing this like 3 hours ago.
No,
I'm just
yeah.
Nah. How's life for you, Bill?
Fantastic. I had a good afternoon. Thank you for asking. And then I took myself out to dinner, and I feel fantastic.
What did you have for dinner?
Martinis
and sea bass. It was great.
Wait, did y'all eat together?
I wish.
Well, let me ask Fonte. How's it going?
I'm good, man.
Did you have a buy yourself date as well? You just
nah. Actually, me, Carvo, and Laia, we went and had some Mexican food for lunch
in New York.
Yeah. Yo,
how'd that turn out?
This shit was banging. I was surprised.
Where'd you go?
The spot in the hotel, the Dos Caminos.
Oh, Dos Caminos. Yeah.
To hear episodes in which we do not remote, but like in person, all of your hotel culinary adventures sound awesome. Like, I've yet to hear a bad review.
And you have to have the Fonte experience in a restaurant. We were just talking about this earlier. There is experience with Fonte. He likes to recommend things. He suggests. You know, he's really good at his
own
process.
Of husk. I've been this size a long time, so I don't get food wrong. I know that. I know snacks.
Speaking of which, I actually, you know, infamously, well, yeah, as a foodie, people will think that my culinary choices are very hoity-toity and whatever, up the way that Laia eyeing me right now. However,
Captain Crunch.
No, dog. I you know what? I gave a chance for the first time and wasn't mad. I'm not mad at Chipotle.
No, Chipotle's really good. Chipotle. Oh my God.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, Steve's shaking his head.
I very much prefer Dos Toros if you're going to go that fast.
That's
food
a franchise
Mexican.
Yes, it is. Across the nation, man.
Oh, well, across the nation, I can't do anything about that. But
wait, Dos Toros is a.
I like Dos Toros' steak much more than Chipotle, and that's what I normally get.
Let's intro our guest today.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it's hard to say whether or not the category that you fall into is just actress or character actress. However, the way she looked like, in my opinion, I think you are an ace character actress because you often come when I don't expect you to show up in any film, no matter what you're in. And you really have the ability. Like, I get excited when, oh, damn.
Yeah.
She's in this.
Right. Oh, it's going to be good.
Yeah, it's going to be good. Nah, for real.
Like, I've yet to have a casual response to, like, if I'm unaware that she's part of it, like, I didn't realize that she was going to be Riz's mother in Wu-Tang.
That part, right.
Right.
That part. Yeah. That, yeah.
Or even Get Out or whatever, like, where you just don't expect to see her.
Yeah.
Then my ears prick up like a puppy, like, oh, yeah, she's there. You know, that sort of thing.
It automatically makes the movie more interesting.
Oh, thank you.
Well, first of all, Caroline in the Oscar nominated
American Fiction.
Yep.
What was your last name in that?
I was Coraline in American
Coraline,
Fiction.
Yes. But did you have a last name in that?
Not that I know of. I was just Coraline.
Okay. Side question before I say your name. If given a character, are you allowed to give yourself a last name if it's not there in your bio? Are you allowed to make your character up if you're...
Yes. I mean, I am. I'm able to do whatever I want as long as I don't put it in the lines or the story.
I get it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Also, Barbell and Run the World, which I don't know.
I
enjoy.
Yeah.
Right.
Thank you.
In the brand new Apple series, Swimming with Sharks, she's Meredith Lockhart. And No. You're in Shining Girls, right? You're Abby
Shining
Keegan.
Girls. That was Apple.
Right. Exactly. I'm sorry. I'm getting my networks mixed up. But of course, we would be remiss, of course, mentioning the world in which at least she entered my life, even though I know you've had a life of acting before then. But, of course, as Cousin Pam on The Cosby Show. But probably I will say that Maxine Shaw is one of the most loved characters, period. And to this day, I still wonder if her and Overton, not Overton,
Kyle.
Yeah.
Yes, are making it. Like, are they
made out
to this day?
In that world.
Yes, exactly. Erica Alexander.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Yes, thank you. I'm very happy and proud to be with you all. Thank you, Chris.
So where are you right now as we speak?
Well, I'm zooming in on a Zoom from Vancouver because I'm filming for the Apple Plus series Invasion.
I watched that. Wait, the second season. It's a second season?
Third season.
Girl, oh, that's a good one. Oh, Erica, I'm killing it.
Yeah.
That's a good one. A
lot of secrets on that set. Simon Kinberg is the showrunner, and he famously did a lot of, well, all of the X-Men movies and Deadpool, I think, or Daredevil, one of them. Yeah, he's pretty awesome.
So you're going to be a recurring
character? I am going to be a regular character, but only on season 3.
So you're in Vancouver right now?
I am in Vancouver, and we are filming, and it's a big production. It's a international, global production. They did a lot of their filming the two previous years in South Africa, Morocco, Japan, England, and now they've kind of rested here in Vancouver.
I see. How many weeks have you been there so far?
I think I'm going on my 4th week. I just got here just after the NAACP Awards.
You know, I often hear of, like, right now, I mean, Vancouver, of course, is an acting hub. Like, how often as an actress are you in Vancouver? Like, how regular are shows? And why, besides the tax reasons or whatever, like, visually, like, why is Vancouver the designated, you know,
place? I filmed here before in 2016. It was another sci-fi series. I forget the name of it, but I don't think there's any other reason besides the tax incentive to come up here. No, it's actually quite beautiful, and it can double for New York City or maybe a European street. It really matters that it's got a lot of nondescript places, a lot of outdoor spaces, so they can do a lot of action here. They've got a really great amount of crew and talent up here. So I think the idea is that the American dollar compared to the Canadian dollar also helps. So there's all these factors. And it is very close to LA. You fly here 2.5 hours, you are here.
Oh, I forgot the proximity. Oh, gotcha. That helps. Hey, by the way, are you familiar at all with La Casa Gelato? Have you heard of this place?
No, it sounds delicious, though.
La Casa Gelato is a place in Vancouver. They have 500 different types of ice cream flavors.
Lord.
Like, when you first walk in, literally, it's the biggest ice cream parlor you ever seen in your life. However, like, once you get in the middle, when you get past the regular chocolate, strawberry, vanilla, then you get into intricate things like cheddar cheese ice cream, balsamic vinegar ice cream, ghost pepper ice cream.
It ain't always supposed to be ice cream.
Fried chicken ice cream.
That, like, that literally, sounds nasty.
It sounds awful.
Yeah, like, nobody. Like,
No. It's worth it. Why are y'all shaking your head?
I take your word for it. I believe you.
Gravy, white gravy ice cream.
Yeah. I take your word for it, bro.
There is pickle flavor ice cream, though. No. I'd highly recommend it for people to, you know, just to
and you're saying
do
this
it
is
once
in Vancouver,
over.
That's the point.
It's in Vancouver, yeah.
It is. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's one of their, like, a landmark spot in there. But
for sure. Yeah, well, if I ever want to have diarrhea and the dribbly shits, I will absolutely
there
drop
it. There you go. Go there straight we go. To that spot.
That's the dribbly shits. Yeah. Dribbly shits.
So am I the only one that's not lactose intolerant?
Good for you, Amir.
Yeah, that's great.
But I feel like I can't be the only black person
you're not
that
the
indulges
only, but it's
in
a rare
ice
thing.
Cream.
Yeah, it's a rare thing.
Oh, okay. Well,
but P.S., I just want to add to y'all, I'm suggesting Invasion because I got to imagine this show is like a super sci-fi show, but it's also like super emotional. Like it's an amazing show. So I can only imagine that it's taking all your energies and whatnot because, man.
Well, you know, it's a very big cast. So a lot of that
different stories
are shifted to different people's shoulders at different times. But what I imagine is that because Simon Kinberg is such a heavy dude, they gave him the type of money that you need for to command that kind of time. So he takes a lot of the time to film, and it's a very thoughtful sci-fi exploration of what it is to be invaded. You know, so that's what you feel. I think you hear that sort of slow creep. And by the way, whenever you feel that in a film, it's because usually the production has more money.
Plain and simple.
There you go.
They don't have to rush through plot and all the types of things that other people do. They can really just sort of linger on people's faces and allow people to perform and or emote. And that's what's happening. Mm-hmm.
See, the way she said emote. Mm-hmm. And I don't see it clearly. Tells me that acting like she's a serious, actor.
A thespian. Yes,
exactly.
Yes.
So, one thing I do know about you, and I never got to talk to you about, you're a Philadelphian.
Come on,
I always forget.
Yes,
and yeah, she graduated. Well, I do know that when I first heard about you, like it was a big deal in the newspapers, like Girls High alumni.
Wow, you went Erica to Girls Allison. High.
Yeah. I did. Wow. Yes, and I went to George Washington High School for a year, and that's where Kevin Hart went. But I'm actually a transplant. Okay. I'm from Arizona, and I came when I was in eighth grade. So I went to Roosevelt and Leeds, too. Roosevelt was like going to a prison. Leeds was one step up.
From prison?
Yeah.
Halfway.
Yeah. One was more closer to Germantown, and that was, I think they closed that down. And then, of course, the other one was more Mount Airy, and that was a lot more, I don't know, better.
Right.
What part of Philadelphia were you from?
Mount Airy.
Oh, nice. He was East in Mount Airy. Nice part of town.
See, when you're from West Philly, I just think anything that's north of City Hall is just N-O-R-F. North Philly, even if it's Mount Airy. So what was your beginnings in the world of acting? Like, were you a Freedom Theater kid, or was this stuff in your school? Did you not want to go to creative and performing arts, or?
Well, you know, I think we had a conversation, Amir, and I know you've had plenty of them, but you went to school with my little sister, Charlonda.
Yes.
She's the one who went to the School of the Arts that you did. Mm-hmm. But I was discovered when I was 14 in a basement theater called New Freedom Theater. Freedom Theater. It's closed. I talked to the councilman the other day.
We got to get that back. That theater is beautiful.
Yeah. It is beautiful, but it's tucked in the middle of Temple University and surrounded by, I don't think, people who understand what its significance.
Gentrification. What's going on with Howard University? I got you. Roger that. Roger that.
So I was discovered in a basement theater by a movie company, Merchant Ivory Film, independent film, came to Philadelphia. They were looking for little girls, black and brown, to audition for this movie. And after nearly 12 to 13 auditions and four screen tests. Yeah, I was the one they chose when the smoke cleared.
Wow, okay. What happened at Freedom Theater? Like, because that was one of the places where I wanted to go, but instead my parents put me in Settlement Music School and my sister went to Freedom Theater. Like, it was like, okay, we're going to have her act and he's going to do music, but we would only pick her up afterwards, but I never knew like what happened in there. Like, what would they teach you there?
Well, Johnny Allen Jr. and his partner, they started it. And they started in the 60s. 60s famously were starting to try to train black children the way the Black Panthers did. That they knew that the schools that were primarily white weren't giving them any sense of themselves. And you had people like the great Nina Simone talking about young, gifted, and black. So that's really what was going on there, with some sort of idea that if you infused a child with a strong sense of themselves and you also gave them creative outlets, got them in touch with their body, discipline, voice, sound, body, all of those things, performance, speech, communication, that you could influence the rest of their life. And they proved their point, like a lot of the schools that were going around the country at the time, and New Freedom Theater is of that kind of tradition.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. 'Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? No, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
How old were you when you started Freedom Theater? Like, at what age did you start?
14. I only went there for the six-week program. And then I also did, like, two summers of a play called Under Pressure, which was their resident production that they put on every year. Every summer.
Is the hope, or I guess the goal of the school, to draw people, notable people, to see the kids and have them work with someone notable? Or is it just like, we teach you the craft of acting and then you're out there in the world? Like, are they like, this is how you get an agent, or this is how you, you know, this commercial casting director is coming to our thing tonight? Like, is it any of those things involved?
No, not when I was going. It might have changed. It really was about self-love, self-reverence, power, Black power, young, gifted, and Black, a sense of yourself inside of a white world. How can you move through it? How do you stand? Lifting your head, your skin, making the children go home and get undressed and look at themselves in a mirror, all parts of themselves, the lower parts of themselves, having some kind of regard and respect for hygiene, the way you spoke, the way you stepped up, grammar, all of those things. It was really more like a boot camp for life for Black kids.
Did you realize that immediately, or is this like in hindsight? Like, I hated going to, I did not hate going to Settlement Music School, but I hated the homework assignments. However, I now realize, thank God I went to Settlement Music School. That saved my life. But you realize that stuff like when you're way older. Did you realize that at the time, or... Because even when we were doing those types of exercises at performing arts school, whatever, like, we'd be in the back laughing, like, you know, they'd want us to learn Elizabethan and project with your voice. And, you know, and we're just like.
That Settlement wasn't as Black as Freedom in that way, though. That's like a different experience, right?
Right.
That's true. I think my sister went to Settlement, too, my baby sister.
Yeah, how many siblings do you have?
I'm one of six. I'm fourth. There's two younger than me. There's Charlonda, who you know, and then there's Maisha, and I think she went to Settlement.
And all of you have dabbled in the arts?
Yes, in some way. Although my sister, he was a social worker there in Philadelphia, and my brother's a Philly cop.
Oh, so your family really stayed in Philadelphia? Were you the
only
one?
Yes, they did. Okay. They did. But both my parents were orphans, so we didn't necessarily have a place to be. Wherever we were was where we were at. Oh, wow. But I think you were talking about, did I recognize what it was doing then? Yes, they were very overt. They kept, it was like a boot camp. It was like an officer and a gentleman. They were going to make you understand the power of being Black and Blackness, and more importantly, the power of self-love. And we needed that, because at the time I was going in there, the streets were a battleground. It was crack, incarceration. Young women were getting pregnant. It was really like some kind of weird pathology movie. And I think they couldn't be soft about it. They had to be overt. They didn't have the privilege to sit back and not act like they were trying to do. They were trying to radicalize you. And I think that it worked.
Well, when you said officer and a gentleman, I'm like, wait a minute. I just remember Louis Gossett Jr. making Richard Gere cry in the in the rain. I'm like, wait a minute. So
yeah, a lot of people cried, but they were crying because it was like church. You got in there and you had real awakenings, and you reckoned with even though you might have thought a lot of people had a confidence and didn't have, I guess, the fears that some children have, they all had that. We weren't allowed to be children in there. I think that they knew they were a different type of child and that they needed to break us down so we could be vulnerable.
All right.
Not me, though, now, by the way. I'm a preacher's daughter. I came in already vulnerable. I was scared of Philadelphia and students. And I was.
Wait, your dad was a
totally
preacher?
Different student. Yeah, Church of God in Christ, baby.
What's your.
Oh, wow. Wait. He was a Kojic. He was Kojic.
For
really?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Where was the church?
Well, my parents are coming out of New Mexico. My Carlsbad, Las Cruces, they were Bible students. They traveled around in the car. And that's why I spent the first 11 years of my life in a hotel called Starlight off of Route 66.
Wow. That was where you lived?
Yeah.
Wow. What was... Wait, let's go back even further. I'm starting at Freedom Theater. Now, I want to hear you as a nomad. What was that like?
I was born in Arizona off Highway 66. But don't want to be associated with those cowboy hicks. Yeah, I got my Arizona song, just like Beyonce got her Texas Hold'em.
That's right.
But, you know, that's what made me different and a little bit, a lot of trepidation in Philadelphia because it was so bombastic and forward. And I'm coming from Hopi, Navajo, Mestizo, Mexican, German Lutherans. And then there was my parents who were Kojic Baptist, and then my father got discovered by the German Lutherans and they sent him to the Lutheran Theological Seminary in Philadelphia. And that was in Chestnut Hill.
So he was going to be, or is currently a preacher?
He died at 52 shortly after finished at the seminary. They sent him to Brooklyn in East New York to start his church, mostly Puerto Rican neighborhood. Most of those people had their churches for years. He maybe had 4 or 5 members, but by that time he was too sick to recover. He was born with a bad heart. They didn't think that he would live past 17. He did. He was a miracle. And I think he lived long enough to deliver us to Philadelphia, and that gave us a lot more choices.
Were you expected to join the ministry?
No.
No, you said that no, very as a matter of fact. Like, what was the home environment like? Because most people of the cloth that I know, like, it's a very strict environment. And hearing that you're a preacher's kid, but also, like, you dabbled in the arts, like, it's almost like oil and water to me. Because most people that I know, like, try to keep their kids out of any joyous expression, like singing, dancing, anything that's deemed secular. So...
Well, that wasn't the case for us. My father was a boy preacher, so he didn't have a choice. Well, let me just put it to you like this. My story and my background, or their origin story, is very Southern Gothic. And so you don't get the feeling that these people are making these choices. They're making choices because that's what's in front of them. And if you look at the Black tradition, a lot of those people were preachers. Around the end of Reconstruction, the people that they called in to ask about 40 acres and a mule were pastors, they were clergymen. Other than that, you were either going to be a farmer, perhaps maybe a teacher, but in showbiz. And so that tradition of preachers' kids becoming showbiz kids, like Denzel and a lot of these people, because we saw performance our entire life. My mother sings, she plays the piano. She was trained as an opera singer and a pianist. My father played the piano by ear. And we got along and got over with the kindness of strangers, because a lot of times they were performing for their food. They didn't just preach. They got in there and said, and suddenly that could get you chicken and maybe some rent.
It sounds like, I mean, just based on what you just told us in the last 10, 15 minutes, like, your family sounds pretty miraculous. Like, you kind of slid in there that both your parents were orphans, mm-hmm. which is miraculous. I mean, not even knowing their adoption story.
Twice.
Wow.
Wow. And them coming together and meeting each other. So my question also was, Did they also have this underlayer of foundation for you to even know about Freedom Theater? Did they also give you this other layer of self-awareness, of blackness? Like, that's a, but on top of going to this church that the Chermans brought him, there's so many layers. Like, did you get that from them as well? Your activism and community and knowing about blackness and who you are?
I would say the activism, yes. I think most black people that came from that era thought they were being hunted, and they were haunted by whiteness. They were hunted literally by white people. And so you always had to assume that you had to find a place to be. It wasn't just like the Green Book. You had to choose where you were going to live. You had to choose the type of career that didn't make you a threat. And so that's why you get people playing, being athletes. They're performing for white people. They're coming in front of them and they're offering their voice and their talents. And suddenly they may be a threat when they go outside of that door, but inside that door, they have a certain type of privilege. And so I think that my mother, who was twice orphaned, and she had an extraordinary background. She was raised by the richest couple in her town in Carlsbad. And that's why she knew how to, Amir talks about enunciation, pronunciation. It's very
that's
important
where it comes
to her.
From.
That's where it comes from. But then, of course, being a child of a preacher, you know that everything they do, you see, it's all part and parcel. But you're also coming from respectability politics. They were the people who did not want to look dusty. You were coming out for plantations. You're talking about after Reconstruction. You're talking about all the things that black people were seen as dirty and unsophisticated and unlearned. They had to immediately establish their bona fide.
And so begins the black bourgeois.
There you go. Well, yes. And then once they found that we had money, so begins the black middle class.
Ooh,
and the race for labels.
You saying that has already brought me back to 12, because there's a time where even if I wanted to go to the movies, I would have to put a suit on. And it's like, why do I have to put a suit on to see Jim Kelly and Black Belt Jones in Silent Scream at the Capitol on 52nd? And their, you know, their whole thing was like, well, yeah, it's respectability safe, politics, safe. But it's also like, if you have a suit on, you won't get shot.
Safe, or, yeah, you're safe.
Yeah. Right. But then I thought it made me a target to bullies. Like, why is he walking in with a suit on? Like, everyone else is casually dressed, but I'm... The one guy is sitting there, like, you know.
Well, Amir, you remember the Boys Choir of Harlem? Mm-hmm. That was the whole mix up there to put on
suits.
Suits. And that's how they went to school, and it made them targets, but it also made them responsible for their behavior. They needed them to look a little different.
I see. After the 6 weeks at Freedom Theater, like, what was your next move into? What brought you a step closer to your profession? Like, at what point were you like, okay, I want to be an actress and pursue it seriously?
I never accepted that I was an actress until maybe my late 30s or early 40s.
So even with Cosby and Living Single, you didn't feel like you were a full-time actress?
No. Nope. I would always go back to my trainer talking about I was going to write my comeback piece.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? No, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at Airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, so I'm skipping. Look, since you brought it up, let me skip. Yes. So the last day of living single, or better yet, a week after living single, are you feeling like, do I go back to being a civilian, or do I, are you basically saying that was your mind state? Like, I'm not a full-time actress until I have the next stable job, or?
Your life as an actor, just as a musician, is very porous. Nothing ever ends. Nothing ever really begins. You can feel a little bit because people have rap parties, and that helps you sort of put your mind around, like, it's done.
Yeah.
But you've probably been auditioning the whole time for other things. And I had been. And at the time, I was dealing with a lot of heartbreak because there was a lot of, I guess, hierarchy as to who they would allow to work other jobs. And I wasn't that person. So
on the cast, you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And so I missed out on a lot of things. Roles that they would offer me, but I couldn't take because Fox wouldn't let me take it. And they would have pushed my career forward. So once I got out of there, and I wasn't, it's like being 5 years in the same high school. You want to go. You're ready to go. And unless there's something keeping you there, some kind of overall goal you might have, maybe you're really bonded with the cast, it's really going well, everybody sort of signs up to do it again, but it was breaking down on its own. So I didn't think about it at all, like, oh, like I'm a civilian. I've always been a civilian, just one that people know. And so I've been famous longer than I was not famous. In Philadelphia, when Mayor Good calls you to the mayor's office and gives you the key to the city and a proclamation, and kids start acting weird around you that never really paid attention to you, you see how celebrity warps things. So all I ever wanted to do was sort of return to a stable version of myself, but that wasn't possible. So I kind of accepted that that came with the territory. But I got to say, once I got out of there, I thought I'm going to be a producer and write, because I'd been trying to do that since The Cosby Show.
Oh, wow.
And the acting thing, I'm not just being kind of glib about it. I hadn't accepted that I was this actress. It's just something that I could always do. So I think as a musician, or you understood that maybe in your core competency, you could always do it. You were good at it. You'd sit down and play the piano and people said, oh, you're good at it. But it didn't mean that you wanted to be a pianist. So with acting, I had to accept later on that I just didn't get chosen, like, hey, you can act and here's a career, that I did enjoy it and that I was an actress. And when I had that sort of come to Jesus moment, it was because a hypnotist put me under. And when I left the office, I started to sob because she said, Erica, you're an actress. And I go, I am an actress. And I had not really said that to myself.
How do you feel now?
I feel like I'm an artist and a creator. And I think that best sort of says about the activism, the fact that I have bigger ambitions than any one production can fulfill. But I just love the idea of people who are creators, and I like to learn.
What's your dream project? The one that you need, that if you had $100 million, this is what I'm making.
You know, I think there's room for a new Pink Panther, and I would love to do a character like that because I'm good at physical comedy and I'm good at comedy, but I'm also dramatic. And I think if you look what Peter Sellers did, he was allowed to be a lot of different states of weirdness. I like the British sense of comedy, and I would like to do something like that.
All right. Let's manifest this.
Yeah, it's coming.
Let's manifest it.
Let's do it. Okay, so now back to your teens. What was the stage that you're like, okay, let's take this serious? Like your first audition, what was that like?
At 14 or just later on after that?
How old were you when Pam came into... Full disclosure, also, I kind of thought I was like maybe a decade and a half older than you. Like
what? That baby until this, face?
You look fucking awesome, by the way.
Thank
but,
you.
Yeah, for real.
Like in my mind, I thought like, okay, well, you know, she's 80s kids, like started, da da da.
Cousin Pam wasn't the teenager that Cousin Pam was supposed to be.
In my mind, I'm like, wait, I was like 20-something when the Cosby Show came in. She was definitely like 14, 15. Because I'm thinking of the special ed episode and all that stuff. So in my mind, you're way younger than me. So I'm like trying to school you and use words like manifest.
That's hilarious. So. No, I was older playing younger than myself because of the hours, you know, that those things take. They try to get kids that are older, teenagers that are gotcha. Older, play younger. I was younger than Malcolm Jamal, but I actually think I'm older than Malcolm Jamal in real life.
Right.
So actually, I didn't audition for Cousin Pam.
That was your first audition?
But she didn't.
No,
she
not
said
at
she
all.
Didn't audition for Cousin
oh,
Pam.
You didn't? Okay.
Came when I was 20 years old.
Okay.
I had been acting since I was 14. I'd gone around the world with the Royal Shakespeare Company. I did a 9-hour play called The Mahabharata. I
what?
Did a miniseries and a movie with Whoopi called The Long Walk Home.
Wait.
So that's where that experience comes from. Okay, I see now.
Yes, and I had done two or three plays at the Public, one with Joseph Papp, his last play called The Forbidden City, Bill Gunn's last play. I had done a lot of theater, which a lot of Black people did. If you look at Sam Jackson and all these cats, there were no TV and films to absorb that type of talent in. You had one or two things. And if you were lucky to be those one or two people, you maybe could catch lightning in the bottle. No one expected to have a career in film and television, certainly not a Black woman. Yeah. So was doing a play at the Public. And the story goes, it was actually a play called The Forbidden City, Joseph Papp's last play that he directed. And the great Gloria Foster, she's the light-skinned woman in The Matrix.
From The Matrix,
says,
yeah.
Yeah, have a cookie, she's the writer's reign. Mm-hmm. That's the great Gloria Foster. And her best friend is Camille Cosby. And what I was told that Camille Cosby came to see the play and then went back to her husband, Bill Cosby, and said, you've got to see Gloria in this play and this little girl. The little girl she was talking about was me. He never saw the play, but I also hear that he liked to give his wife gifts, and I was a gift. I got a call one day, could you be at Mr. Cosby's house in about an hour? And I showed up just off of Park Avenue in the Central Park, and he made a roll-up for me right in front of my face. He said, so there's this girl, and her name is Pam, and she's the cousin of Claire, and that's how it went. And I said, thank you very much. And I was Cousin Pam.
He must have loved that you were from Philly, too. It just all came together. Yeah.
Call me hometown. And he really put a definition and, I don't know, kind of a premium around people who were self-made. And I think that's what he liked, that he saw me as being self-made and that I didn't need him. Those were his words.
How intimidating was it to enter not only like an established institution, but I mean, by that point, it was such a well-oiled machine, and oftentimes in kind of the folklore TV shows, like adding a new character that late in the game is often seen as a jump in the shark moment.
Yes.
Oscar the Brady Bunch or whatever.
Yes.
Or Oliver.
Oliver.
Wow. Why you?
I watched a lot
of
TV.
I thought that was closer to you right now. You mentioned Oliver from the Brady Bunch. Yeah. So, but how did it feel just coming into an already established, well-oiled machine by that point?
Well, I guess the difference is I'm not the star. I'm a featured character. I get to day trip. I get to drop in, add a little salt and pepper. But the flavor's there. And it's a new dish. It's got a lot of juicy dark meat, you know, and so they're adding a different flavor. But they've had the criticism that the Cosby Show was too inaccessible. The family was inaccessible because they were too upper class. So Cousin Pam came in from the other side of the tracks.
Oh, you're supposed to be the street element.
Can you imagine?
Did they want you to be more thugged out than you were? Or like, how did you?
I think that if he had told that to the writer's room, they might have thought it. But you have to understand, the king of respectability politics right. back in the day was Bill Cosby. So he set us down, me, Carmelina White, Al Payne, and gave us the speech, "Do not make me ashamed." Just like you get at church, don't you go out there and act a fool. Don't do all your head. Don't do, you know, any extra on it. And so we were told that we weren't going to do it, but it was sort of just saying, this is not that place. I have Mary McKeeba on the show. I have this person on that show.
Dizzy Gillespie,
we are the talented 10th.
Do as and I say.
But Karen was Charmaine, so she must have had to constantly like.
Yes.
That's right.
She went to Kappa.
Yeah, so she must have had to constantly weigh that line because that's like, that's Charmaine.
No, she didn't because they got her because she talked like that. I mean, they wanted that flavor. They didn't know what to do to Cousin Pam, so it's like they gave me my own posse. Wow. And that helped
take that was dope.
The strain off the show. So I got it. I probably wasn't people's cup of tea, and I didn't really necessarily know what I was doing. I didn't think I was funny, but I also didn't think they wrote me funny, and I was confused a lot. By the time I got to Living Single, I understood the idea of acting to camera and having an audience. I had done them separately, but to put them together was confusing. And then I got it. I'd asked Mr. Cosby, I said, who do I act to? And he said, the audience, because he's stand-up. I asked the director, Ellen Gittleson. I said, who do I act? And she said, the camera. They were both right. So I had to get that type of timing in my head. Listen for the audience because they were my best. They were the fourth character in the show.
Yeah.
And then also, if they couldn't see what I was doing because the light wasn't on the camera, because the camera wasn't ready, you had to hold. And so there's this dance you're doing. And it's like timing, it's like music. And if you get
Did
it,
you say dance,
you can be funny.
Did you say dance? Because that makes me think of the Cousin Pam dance. You know that's a thing, right?
No.
The Cousin Pam dance from the special ed episode?
The special ed episode.
When you what? That's a thing. What? Like, yes.
You did not know that.
I didn't know it. Thank you for letting me know there's a dance.
It's funny you said that because there was an episode of Arsenio in which De Niro, who rarely gives interviews, was basically explaining to Arsenio, I think it was right around the time when Goodfellas was coming out, so it was like 89, 90, whatever, and De Niro was explaining to him, like, basically, I'm not acting. He gave this whole thing about, like, most actors will, you know, the mistake they make is they show emotion and all that stuff. And he's like, real life people don't show their emotions. They hold back. So he was basically saying that because he holds back and is very dry in his delivery, that's what makes him the everyday person.
Yeah.
Right. And that stuck with me a lot, even though like acting wasn't my focus back then. But when he said that, I was like, oh, so acting
less is more.
It's what you hold back. Mm-hmm. And I actually liked your role because I'd never seen someone of your character, of your ilk, not be a caricature? Because I think sometimes it's almost like the acting version of being a gospel chops musician. You know, like every musician nowadays got to show off big. Everything they do.
Like all the melisma.
Yeah. Melisma, yes.
You held back. And then I saw an interview that you did, and because you had Felicia Rashad's, you know, like when she talks, like Felicia Rashad has that that chamomile. Mm-hmm.
It's grace.
Tea, sort of, yeah.
Grace. Like, yeah. Just...
When you spoke like that, I was like, oh, she's like a real actress. And I was going to ask if you dabbled in Shakespeare, but you already told that to us. I actually like the fact that you were kind of nondescript in The Cosby Show and that you weren't all the way, you know, you could have been JJ, right, you could have been JJ or Hillary from The Fresh Prince of Bel Air, like a caricature. I don't know. That was my two cents.
I appreciate that. I think what you're seeing is that I think somehow, even in a character, you have to express a level of authenticity. Yeah. And I'm from Arizona. So I don't have the idea of blackness as being a set of tropes that are like very big and large. Because that's not what I saw. I saw black people be black like American Fiction black.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the idea is that we're presented with a set of stereotypes that we don't even know that we're pushing. And black people are probably only people to have burden. We're always trying to balance a version of ourselves, and we don't even know where we end or begin anymore. But I do say this about comedy. It is a full contact sport, and you have to give to receive. You have to embrace it. You have to challenge. You have to love it. You have to go out on a limb. You have to be bold. You can't be scared. You can be. You have to be curious, and that allows you to be free in the moment and make improvisational choices, because I'm not necessarily changing the line, but I am changing the inflection in the line.
The delivery of it.
The delivery.
So that said, could you tell me, if we're going to the social media term, how it's going and how it ended or whatever, when you're given Maxine Shaw, which, you know, as I said at the top of the show, I believe that Maxine's character is the anchor of that show. You know, like for me, Latifah is the I guess the straight man of the clique. And
she's the Dorothy.
Not mom.
Yeah. Right. And both Kims have to sort of be the
Blanche.
Colorful.
Blanche.
Yeah,
Blanche.
The
right. Which really Rose, allowed you, I think, a lane to really like all of your punchlines were funnier and all, your physical comedy and then your chemistry. Which at the time, I don't think you're going into this thing thinking like, okay, by season one, I'll be this character. And then we'll have our sort of rapport with each other. Like, because both of you two basically wrote each other to glory, in my opinion. But how did you prepare for your role as Maxine Shaw on Living Single?
I prepared for it my entire life before I got there. And I took every little piece that I understood and put it in a role that nobody was paying attention to, because I wasn't the star that Latifah or Kim Coles or Kim Fields was. I was actually fourth. I was the dark skinned person in there with T.C. Carson, and they weren't looking at me. And I learned from The Cosby Show, or at least I understood now, the dance of the camera, comedy, and the audience.
And the audience, yeah.
So I knew, and you can see in the first year, we kind of pushed those stereotypes that got us the roles, the audition, like, girl, I got this. So it's a little amped up.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what you do to get the role. Otherwise, these people who are executive positions don't think you're doing anything if you come in and do something that's a little bit more laid back. We're not allowed that type of soft presence that that other performers get. Black people have to come with it right away. Mm-hmm. So I like to think that I'm in there discovering and experimenting, and it's not harming anybody as long as I deliver the show they want. But each time I got more information about what the audience liked about Max. And each time I wanted to deliver a version of her that was authentic to me, Erica, but that balanced the show, because you have to be generous with comedy. The people aren't, that's why they don't do so well. They're trying to get the line funny all the time. And sometimes you're there to take the hit and sort of just look. And it's not about you. It's about you just tossing around and you got to know. But I think nobody was looking. So that's what I was.
I think people oftentimes when they see greatness or whatever, you take it for granted. Mm. Again, I always refer to watching Steph Curry play. Like, he's going to throw it in and you automatically know it's going in no matter what. So at one point, you just take for granted that, all right, yes, he knows.
He's pulling off some incredible shit.
Right.
Because he does it all the time.
Right. But then it's like, okay, they always do that. But I don't think people really appreciate the fact that, first of all, it's six of you. And so I almost feel like, all right, so in jam session situations, especially when I'm playing with musicians that aren't my guys in the Roots, I automatically have to go into, okay, this guy's overplaying, so let me dial it down a little bit so that it's not too overwhelming. Because my fear is that, I always make the all-star game analogy, that all-star games are very boring because everyone's on 100. So there's really no sense of drama, whatever. Like, when everyone's at 100, to me, that's just as boring as everyone being amateurs.
Yeah. Exactly.
So how do you... But there's such a push and pull chemistry with the six of you when you're in scenes together. Like, what do you credit that to? The writing of the show, or do you know to hold back sometimes and let Kim get her shine or whatever? And is it like a game of basketball in which you guys like instantly know like what the other character is going to do? Because there's even some moments on that show in which I'm like, I wonder if they rehearsed that ahead of time to get the timing right or that sort of thing. Like, to me, it was effortless. So when did it gel for you?
It gelled immediately. Everybody
wow,
saw it.
Really?
And I think the right analogy is music. I think that if there was genius or maybe lightning in a bottle, it's because they recruited performers and other collaborators that have a penchant for individualism. But they play well with others. They're soloists that play well with others. If you look at Latifah, Kim Coles, Kim Fields, we could all be soloists, but we understand the whole. And you've got to have, your self-esteem has to be in check. You have to know who you are. And I think that we were at an age, I was 23 coming in, but we had done enough in life that we didn't have to win. We knew we would win if we all won. So I think that you want soloists who play well together, especially if they respect the ensemble, and we did.
Hey, you talked about being a brown-skinned woman on the screen. I'm so curious for Maxine Shaw and this look. You know, I was just talking to somebody earlier, and we were talking about your braids. And somebody was like, did you know that Erica's braids were made out of yarn? I was like, yeah, we used to do that back in the day, especially because hair costs more than yarn. But regardless, I'm so curious how you were able to pull this off at 23 and you being fourth on the call sheet, this look.
I came in with that look.
Okay.
I can assure you that no white person would have ever allowed me to come in with that look. And it wasn't because the white thing has nothing to do with it. It's just that she was the lawyer and they would have probably wanted her hair pressed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I came in like that because I had worked with Whoopi Goldberg. She played my mother on The Long
Walk
Home.
I knew she
was
your mother on... Yes, I remember now. Mm-hmm. Yes, Sissy's Basic. Yes.
And we carry with us, all of us in the world, everybody.
Yes. Yeah.
Somebody imprints on you. So if you look at that hairdo, it's Jumpin' Jack Flash.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's a short bob. So,
yeah.
Stop that. With the...
Yeah.
There you go. And I just come from that tour. I mean, actually, I just come from a series for ABC, and the producers asked me, would I shave my hair? And I did. It was nothing. It was natural. Because my hair kept frizzing up and I didn't have a perm. And so they asked me to shave it off. I said I would. And I was growing it out. And I had a hairdresser in Brooklyn, Deborah Hair Bay, who does the in-ray locks. And she said, I know what I can grow your hair out. And so if you see the whole back is shaved and she had enough to catch on the top, she said, I'll do a cool bob. And you can do anything with this hair. And I just happened to walk in and audition with that hair. And that's Maxine.
Wow. And by the time you finished the show, it was gorgeously long and layered and
and it was a wig.
Get the fuck.
That's right. Because what? I kept getting recognized. and I couldn't go anywhere. So I said, you got to make a wig.
So yeah, so that was about a question earlier. You were talking about you could see the response from people. How did you know? I mean, because this is pre-social media.
Yeah.
Like, how did you know, like, okay, this is really, is hitting? Like,
it was instant. Word. We were on Sundays, and our lead-in was Martin, and we beat our lead-in from then on. So if you say beat the number one show, and I don't like to say black show, but you have a cast of black people, and you beat the show, they'd say the black show, the number one black show in America for Latins and blacks, you win. So that's what happened.
Wow.
I can't remember if they went because did that help Martin? I can't remember.
It was kind of messed up. They made a Thursday night. They put New York Undercover. And they made like a black night, and we were all insulted by it.
Wait a minute. So... okay, because I was about to say, I always remember Living Single as a Thursday show. It started as a Sunday show.
It was a Sunday show.
After Living Color, that's right.
No, no.
It was.
It was, our lead-in was Martin, then was Living Single.
And then Living Color.
I think Living Color was on another, I don't know if they were on another.
It was probably off by
then. It was Fox.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, they were all Fox. No, no, no.
Oh, you were Fox too?
Yeah,
you were
Fox.
Yes, okay. Yeah.
But then they decided, let's put them all on the same night. And that was Black Night Thursday. Then they flipped Living Single to first. We became Martin's lead-in.
Gotcha.
Wow. That's what Damon Wayans was fighting. Remember that?
Oh.
When they tried to do that to him instead, I think. Or somebody.
I did not know that. Okay.
Hi, everyone. This is Sugar Steve from Questlove Supreme. We are so sorry to do this, but we're ending part one right there. Please come back this Friday or check your podcast feed for part two with the incredible Erica Alexander. In that interview, Erica speaks about working on Get Out, American Fiction, and her role as RZA and Divine's mother on Wu-Tang in American Saga. See you soon.
See you soon.
See you soon.
Thank you for listening to Questlove Supreme. This podcast is hosted by Amir Questlove Thompson, Laia St. Clair, Fonte Coleman, Sugar Steve Mandel, and myself, Unpaid Bill Sherman. The executive producers are Amir, Just Walked Into the Goddamn Room Thompson, Sean G, and Brian Calhoun. Produced by Brittany Benjamin, Jake Payne, and Laia St. Clair. Edited by Alex Conroy. I know Alex Conroy. Produced for iHeart by Noel Brown.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.